Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You think about reality shows, of course it's in a different type, you know, format or way that it's shot, but The Wire for me was one of the first reality type of shows, because so many people around the world, not just in Baltimore City, could identify with everything, the details of what was going on, whether it was in the streets, whether it was in the educational system, the media, politics. I mean, you know, even me sitting here speaking about this, I know I'm a part of history.
Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Kobe.
And we are the hosts of The Wire Stripped. That's the podcast you're listening to. It's about HBO's The Wire, and we talk about it.
We talk about it week by week, go through each episode, and you don't just hear from our voices, you hear from the voices of the cast, voices of the crew, and voices of the you. That's right, you can stay tuned to find out how we can hear your voice on this podcast later on.
And if you don't want your voice to be heard, then you can just send us a message on social media, at The Wire Stripped on all the social medias.
Yeah, and today's episode is Season 4, Episode 4, Refugees. And I think let's just head to our chat talking about this that we recorded earlier.
Yeah, here's us. A few pros.
Sorry, guys. Hey, more of us.
When you walk through the garden, you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon. Walk the straight and narrow track. When you walk with Jesus, he's gonna save your soul. Just gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He got the fire and the fury.
Hey Dave, how are you doing?
I'm good, Kobe. How are you?
I'm good. I'm feeling lucky. Just
feel
good.
The chips are in your favor.
They are going to fall in my favor. Just as well, we're outside of Poker Den, ready to get some flushes going.
We go to great lengths here to theme our locations around the episode. We found a poker den.
Get some flush. Get some three of a kinds going down. I don't know what that means.
Three of a kinds.
Three of a kinds.
A few four leaf clover flush royal flushes.
Some pairs. Some split aces.
I don't know. Not a poker guy.
I don't know. I've played.
There was a real fad in the noughties. Remember that?
It was because it became on TV, didn't it?
Yeah.
So you could watch. You could watch poker. We're outside of Poker Den, waiting for, coincidentally, Mayor Royce and Marlo to come out.
Yeah, two poker games.
Yeah.
In one episode.
Gambling heavy episode. Yeah. This one.
I thought that was interesting. I mean, let's just get into it.
Yeah.
So we're here now. Let's talk about this episode.
Let's go straight into it. Which poker game do you want to talk about first?
Let's talk about the Mayor Royce's one.
Sure.
So let's talk about the two of them together, because it's interesting that this is the money that greases the oils of the city, really, right? This is the cogs, it's all around one game. And I thought it was interesting that it's a game, it's the game,
yeah.
You know, it's The Wire.
Nice.
But like these are two very different, like, audiences, two very different participants, I should say. But they're effectively playing the same game. They're playing with the same amounts of money.
Yeah.
Right? And it's all, like, it's they're playing with the lives of people or people in the city, right? And it's like, and it reminds you that so much of what happens in this city and any city is down to, just like poker, luck and circumstance as well.
Well, is it luck? Maybe when it comes to Marlowe, it's luck or lack of ability. I know there is some skill to poker. I don't have it. But with the Mayor Royce table, you had the guys like Andy Krawcheck losing on purpose, weren't they?
Yeah.
To make sure that should Royce win, that, you know,
The game is rigged. Just like the game.
Helping themselves to rig the game.
Yeah.
By losing one game, they get money from the bigger game. Hope you're following me here, guys. But
that's a game.
That's the idea.
Man, the political storyline was shocking.
Boo hiss. This is Bubbles' tormentor, played brilliantly by the actor Armando Cadogan Jr.
You really got to go through hurdles and layers of paperwork and lies, scandals to make something happen. You know what I'm saying? So that it was also educational. You know what I mean? Like The Wire, you know how you're growing up and you kind of like trying to figure out what you want to do in life? The Wire is one of those shows and say, you know what? I think I want to get into the education system. Or you know what? I think I want to get into politics. Or you know what? I want to be a motherfucker hustler. I want to be a drug dealer. You know what I mean? Or you know what? I want to get into the police department, because you was able to see the ins and outs. Or you know what? I want to do press and media. I want to get into like reporting and stuff like that. The Wire gave you the ins and outs of all these sectors, all these industries. So you can watch The Wire and be like, I really want to make a difference with press. You know what I'm saying? So when it came to the politics, I was like, this is a lot of work. Like, it's a lot of lies going on. I ain't trying to get involved in this shit. You know what I'm saying? This is too much. Like, this is some nasty work. This is some nasty business right here, man. You feel me? So that's what I saw from the... That was my take.
But in Marlowe's game, part of it, for him, I don't think he really gives that much of a fuck, but also he'd like to win. But at the same time, he's like, I've got all this money. I don't know really what to do with it. So if I win more, then that's great. If I lose, then I'm going to, you know, take it out on someone else.
What I liked about... Yeah, exactly. You know, you kind of are afraid for those guys if he keeps losing.
Yeah.
But what... Let's just talk about Marlowe then, because this whole cold open, you know, we got the poker and then we'll talk about the shoplifting and the security guard. But the... We learn a lot about Marlowe from that poker table, right? Because like you said, it's like he's... It shows he's kind of inexperienced at poker.
Yeah.
Right? Because we meet Marlowe and he's just like the lord of the streets, right?
Cold and calculating,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, and he's like... And he's still got that cool confidence. But as you said, poker has a skill element and he just doesn't have that yet.
No.
But it shows he's showing up again and again. Like, you get the sense he's coming back to this table again and again. He's probably losing again and again, but he's learning, right? So he's training. He's got commitment and dedication and he's going to... take those guys one day, one way or the other.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's just dogged determination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he might not understand a game, but he'll learn that game quick, and you just know he'll master it. So that shows you that. And then, in the shop, we see this kind of brazen, sort of brash side of him, where he's just like, shoplifting candy bars.
Does he pick them up? Pick up these lollies. Almost waving in the guy's face.
Yeah, he definitely did it to piss off.
Winking a smile and then and then walks out.
He's flaunting it. It's kind of youthful brazenness, but also he's exercising his power over authority. And it's got, for me, this was the best line on the episode when he says, you know, to the security guy, you know, you want it to be one way, but it ain't like that.
Yeah. Or you think it's one way, but it's the other.
That's it. Yeah, thank you.
You think I dream of coming to work up in this shit on a Sunday morning? Tell all my friends what a good job I got. I'm working to support a family, man. Pretend I ain't talking to you. Pretend like I ain't even on this earth. I know what you are. Now, I ain't stepping too, but I am a man. And you just clip that shit and act like you don't even know I'm there.
I don't.
I'm here. Look, I told you I wasn't stepping too. I ain't disrespecting you, son.
You want it to be one way.
What?
You want it to be one way.
Man, I don't
you
know
want
what
it to
you...
be one
Man,
way.
Stop!
Stop saying that. What is the other way?
You take that line and you take Marlo and you stick him in the Matrix as Morpheus and it would work entirely, right? It's kind of like the red pill, blue pill. You think it's one way,
but it's the other.
But it's the other.
There's a scene in the fourth season.
This is Ernest Dickerson, a director on The Wire.
Where, you know, Marlo has lost a bunch of money at a poker game and he goes into a convenience store and he pays for water, but he steals two lollipops, making sure that the security guard there sees him do it. And then the security guard comes out and he's like, man, it's Sunday morning. You think I like this job? Why you put me in a position where I gotta come over to you and talk about this? I'm not trying to step to you, but why are you doing this? You know, I'm a man. Why you gotta do this to me? And he looks at him and he says, you want this to be one way, but it's the other. And then one of his assassins pulls up in an SUV, and the guy and the security guard backs off, and he's like, "You want it to be one way, but it's another." And that line just kind of resonates over the whole season because, you know, you want the schools to be one way, but they're another.
A lot of people don't like when I say this, but I think the character in the show, man, was Marlo, man.
This is the voice of Nathan Corbett, who played Donut.
That scene where you wanted to be one way. You wanted to be one way, but it's the other way. That scene was crazy, man. Marlo just, man, and Marlo was able to make it out, you know, when he realized, man, that shooting shot shit is not for me. You know, realized that he knew who and what he was, man. He was the biggest shot in the ocean.
Well, we go. I mean, let's stick with the poker side Dreamcast of things for a bit. We have Omar meeting Prop Joe, and Prop Joe says to Omar, "By the way, your boy Marlo is going to be at this game. There's going to be a lot of money on the table. Do you want? I can give you the access code. I can give you the PIN numbers." And Omar's like, "Yeah, I'll do that. Cheers, dude."
He said, "Omar is suspicious, but not suspicious enough, because Prop Joe is plotting Joe. He's clearly plotting something here. How does Omar not see it?"
I struggle to understand why Omar went for that, because that's not Omar's style. Unless he needs that new target now that the Barksdales have gone and hidden away.
I don't think he went because it was Marlo. I think he went probably because he had a hot tip and he scoped it out and there was a lot of money and he just thought, why not? That's kind of the vibe I got. It didn't seem personal or anything.
No.
It's just like, it's just a job.
Well, I kind of got the impression that he was like, he needed that kind of, that bite to make it worthwhile for him, because he doesn't seem to need the money, even though, he lives in the vacants.
Well, you're right, because when we see Omar a couple of episodes ago in that cold open, he's bored, isn't
he? Exactly.
Yeah.
He's out, so maybe it's just
cereal.
It maybe just shits and giggles, but then this is what really sparks off the feud between Marlo and Omar, which we start to see, or we can see where that kind of catalyst from is in this episode. It's going to play out across the next few episodes and season.
Yeah,
so really.
Exactly. Let's cover off the politics desk.
Sure.
Over to Kobe on the politics desk. Kobe, what's the latest on the election?
Well, at the moment, everyone's betting on Royce winning, and why wouldn't they? But also Carcetti is a bit scrappy, and he's having some core meetings, which is kind of thinking a bit of a waste of my time, but at the same time, you know, I've got nothing to lose here, so let's go.
He's still the scrappy underdog.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he gets a notion here to talk to the Interdenominational Ministerial Alliance.
Nice.
As I now know they're called, because I looked that up. Although I keep reading it as the Interdimensional Ministerial Alliance. Which, yeah, you do that.
It's like Doctor Strange kind of thing going on here.
Should be a very different kind
multiverse
of alliance. This is Royce's heartland, right? This is Odell Watkins and crew.
Yep.
And like, this is not Carcetti's base, right?
Not at all.
So this is literally, you know, a white guy walking into a room with like diehard religious black people, right?
Yeah.
This is kind of how that scene turns out. But it works out really well in his favor because, well, you know, his team say they won't entertain you, it's pointless, but he shows good grace, I think. And
absolutely. If he hadn't done it, then they would just dismiss him as like, yeah, another run-of-the-mill guy. But at least you showed face, showed some humility.
Yeah.
And it was appreciated, even if they probably, even if at that time, Carcetti left, they're probably thinking, I'm still not going to vote for him. But at least he,
you know, yeah, nothing to lose, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that was good, and
he gets the thank you on the way out.
He gets the thank you on the way out, and on the flip side, you got Odell Watkins, who's a big player, has a lot of weight in terms of the political side of things, certainly in the mayor side of things, and he's getting a bit more disgruntled with Royce, but that's not known to Royce. That's kind of playing under at the moment.
Yeah, because we see he's pissed off because he's his protege, Marla Daniels, has been left off the Royce ticket.
Royce ticket, yeah.
And the more shouty candidate, what's her name, Eunetta Perkins.
Yeah,
she's on board instead. And Odell is not happy. And you get the sense you do not want this man as an enemy.
No.
You know, they didn't send me a cast list, nothing. So when I got into wardrobe, they started fitting me and they were trying to put me with the other actors. So they had headshots on the wall. And I'm like, oh, who's that? And they're like, oh, that's McNulty. Like, that's the dude. And I'm like, oh, that's my dude, you know? Fantastic. I'll take it, you know?
This is the voice of Brandy Burry, who played Teresa D'Agostino.
And then I saw Aiden. I was like, Aiden, wait, how do I know him? And then Queer as Folk came into mind. And so this was cool because this is what my friends were watching and what we thought was interesting. So I was grateful for him because he was the first person I shot with. The scene where I meet him in the bar was my first scene and very nerve-wracking because I was like projecting like a theater actor when they said rehearsals up and I get in and I've never seen anyone, didn't meet the director, didn't meet anyone because they've been shooting all day. They don't have time to introduce me to people. So I've just tried to say my lines and not mess up. And they say, cut. Okay, we got to fix some lights and, you know, actors can go out and take a break. And he said, you know, there's a microphone right above your head. And I was like, huh? You know, he said, you don't have to scream. You don't have to shout at me. I was like, oh, okay. This is how it's going to be. All right. But so he, you know, it was joking, but it was also very enlightening.
Right. As you all know, we do have a Patreon page at patreon.com/thewirestripped. But we now have another way you can help us out and the Ella Thompson Fund.
Yeah, so if you guys are listening on Apple Podcasts, you can subscribe to us to get a lot of the same benefits as a Patreon account, but it makes it easier if you want to help contribute to the lovely people at Ella Thompson Fund who, just to remind you, I'm sure we've said a few times this episode already, but they help support underprivileged kids in Baltimore in the way that Cutty did in The Wire.
Yeah, so you can get access to our episodes early. You can get access to our full interviews with the cast and crew, including our extended interview with David Simon.
No adverts on there as well. And also, Basking in the Glory, they help me out a lot of lovely people in Baltimore and the kids there. It's simple. If you're on Apple Podcasts, scroll up the feed now, and there's a button for you to click on, and it costs less than the price of a coffee every month to support lots of lovely people. Last few episodes, we saw Marimo, the unit killer, I think they call him.
Yeah. He's so good in this, because yes. You just hate him so much, right?
The perfect dickhead. So he's pissed off Kima, he's pissed off Freeman. They've both bounced off to Homicide, and this is the warm
blanket of Rawls's embrace.
Rawls' embrace, yeah. and Landsman, and this is Kima's first day in Homicide, and I love it.
And as on any first day in the office, she is hazed to high heavens. But she gets not just one hazing; she gets a series of hazes.
She does do.
Yeah,
the old methane pump, was it, or methane probe?
Yeah, methane probe. that was the call was about, that was, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Proper like Simpsons, old school.
Yeah, Moe's Tavern. Yeah, exactly. Vibes. And then I really enjoyed the note in the hand of the corpse. Like, know, yeah. Just shows you the dark humor of these homicide
let's
detectives.
Let's type up a note and put it in the hands of this dead guy and get Kima to
Yeah. Clue. But Bunk sells it so well. Like, he does it, his like sarcastic overtone is so funny.
Twirling his mustache almost.
So good. The comedy is just on point in this episode. We also meet all the characters through Bunk trying to hunt down Lex.
Yep.
Right. Still on that case. And McNulty helps them serve a warrant on the home, and Bunk realizes that he's a good detective, and he spots that the mother is clearly grieving, yeah. Yeah. Right? But still is saying that he's in the wind. So he kind of says, you know, you're not telling me everything here, but also threatens her. Like, do you want? Yeah, we'll keep coming to raid. Like, this is why Bunk is good. Like, he's kind of man of the people, but he'll also get the fucking job done, right? He's absolutely not afraid to bust into a lady's house once a week until he gets his case closed.
Bunk and Freeman banded together to take on this case on Lex. But of course, that means let's go to the bar. Let's have a few drinks.
Yeah, and it's like he's the McNulty substitute for Freeman, isn't it? Or for Bunk. And Bunk's not happy.
Bunk's not happy. He's not. No. Obviously, he enjoys Lester's candor and his company, but he's no McNulty.
He's not his wingman.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't help him get the ladies. And this is one of my favorite lines, which is maybe a bit too much.
Oh, almost everything that Bunk and McNulty and Freeman say is not cool anymore, not PC. I don't think, if it ever was.
It's like he says, Freeman, do you know what the plural of pussy is? Pussy. I don't know.
It's one of those things. That's your alternative epigraph.
That's my alternative epigraph. Absolutely.
Front of the show. Pussy.
And again, if he's dead, where's that body?
Do you know what the plural of pussy is? Puss eye. Jimmy taught me that.
Where's he putting the bodies, Bob, huh? In the sewers? Royal funeral home, maybe?
Yeah, they teach that fancy-ass Latin at them Catholic schools.
You remember that Eddie Crane case? Mm-hmm. Where was they put him? In an acid vat down near Curtis Bay.
Oh, they're coming up on us now.
Now, for a West Side boy like Marlo Stanfield, that would be the traditional dumping grounds.
Hey, girl.
Right?
Hey, girl.
Right?
What?
Man.
Jimmy! Trying to get some of that pussy.
But yeah, the ladies that Bunk's trying to attract, they just walk past him.
Yeah.
And he realizes who he's with. Basically a detective genius, not a wingman.
Freeman's got his eye on something else. Absolutely. He's too preoccupied with these missing bodies, the lack of murders.
Where is my Lex? Bodies?
But the what got me in this scene was when Freeman kind of says something like to Bunk, like, aren't they a little young for you? And I'm like, dude, didn't you shack up with the stripper season one, man?
I was thinking that. She's like half his age.
Hot kettle black.
Absolutely. Obviously, there's a lot. I think we want to spend a lot more time in the schools in this episode. But let's just a quick trip to the MCU. We talked about Marimo. Effectively, the reason why Lester and Kima left. But we see the MCU's, it's in a sad state with Sidna and Caroline Massey.
Shutting down those wires?
Yeah.
Then they look sad.
It is sad.
Yeah.
Marimo is a proper tool. He's been there to shut the, you know, close the unit down in that respect. But he doesn't know what's the power of those wiretaps.
Yeah.
And it's sad you see Massey and Sidna closing this, you know, literally pulling the plug on those machines, which we've seen build out for the past three seasons. It's like, fuck.
Well, imagine like
such a dick.
Imagine if you've been working on something for so long,
yeah,
and then someone else comes in, and you get a new boss, and they're like, no, that, you know what? That's pointless. Now start this thing over here, and you know it's the wrong thing.
Exactly.
It would be so infuriating.
Whenever you get a new boss, you're like, do they get it, or do you have to like? No, they don't get it, do they?
No. Oh, no. Oh, no. Not only do they not get it, they're not going to listen to me.
No, exactly. And that's what the dejected walk out of the MCU is for Cinder and Massey.
But don't worry, because the MCU is about to get its hottest. Its hottest alumni back.
Yeah.
Herc is back.
Herc is back with Dozerman, but mainly Herc.
Yeah.
And he's
Dozerman as well. Like the two wrong guys to be fronting the MCU.
But Herc is pleased as punch, but he thinks he's going back to be with his guys.
Yeah.
Again, does no one talk to anyone else in this thing?
I'd say no one talks to Herc.
Right? Do you think they're just ignoring his calls?
Like, probably.
Freeman gets he's called, not in the loop. He gets a call from Herc. He's like, I'll call him back later. I don't care.
Yeah, what does this guy want?
And Herc's like, I'll catch up with him on Monday.
Even Marimo can read between the lines about what's happening with Herc, though. He's like, you know, it says here you were driving the mayor for 3 months and now you're a sergeant.
Yes, yeah, so what's going on, mate?
I was the only officer that never got a gun until middle ground, which was December of 20. Refugees, the last episode I was in. And when I came in to my trailer, there was a vest, a gun, because all I ever had was a badge.
This is the voice of Joylette Harris. She's the actress that played Caroline Massey.
And I said, well, if some real bad guys come in here, what am I to hold up my badge and defend the whole unit? You know, but I was the one that never got the auxiliary props, you know, the Glock and all that, until it was my last day of work. And I still didn't have lines. The director who directed that episode, I think it was...
Jim McKay. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I picked up my gear. Picked up my vest, threw it over my shoulder, picked up my gun, picked up my phone, and he said, Joy, just look over your shoulder and I fuck everybody else in the room. I'm like, what? He said, turn around and do your thing. I fuck everybody in the room. I'm like, yeah, I go, I'm just rolling my eyes. That was my infamous roll on the wire, rolling my eyes.
Kobe, Dave, it's lovely to hear your voices again, and I'm really, really loving the fact that you've come back and done season four. I'm just going to let you know a few of my thoughts about season four of The Wire from the perspective of me, that's Joe. I'm an educator. I also have a podcast called Right in the Schoolies, where I go by my teacher name of Mr. James, and I talk to people from all walks of life about their time at school. The scene which will always live long in the memory for me is the moment where, you know, they're in the classroom and the president sort of, you know, throwing his weight around a bit, trying to be authoritative, you know, saying about, you know, where's Michael? You know, oh, he's not here. Right, well, he's got detention. No, he can't be here. You know, and he say, what do you mean? He said, well, he can't. He has to walk his brother. And in that little moment just there, you see a moment flash between the kids and with Prez. Kids have a code with one another, teenagers especially. They understand, you know, that there's a dignity in not talking about the situation that Michael's in with his awful, awful home life. Season four is a masterpiece. I actually think if they finish with season four, then the show could well be a masterpiece. Don't get me wrong, I'm not dissing season five. There's plenty of thoughts about that. But season four is a masterpiece. It reaches its zenith, in my opinion, when it gets there.
Big thank you for leaving that voicemail on our burner phone. You can do that too. All you got to do is type in these numbers into your mobile telephone. +44 75 34 83 1 6 5 8. It's that simple. Type in those numbers. That number is on our socials, by the way. You can go there and get it. And then send us a voice note, 30 seconds or less. Don't forget to leave your name and tell them what we want to answer the question of. What a brilliant sentence. Go for a cup.
We wanted to know this week, who's your favourite character from season four and, of course, why?
A lot of people don't like when I say this, but I think the character in the show, man, was Marlo, man.
And if you don't like doing that, then you can send your voice via email technology to burner@thewirestripped.com.
And if you guys want to get priority burner access, and that means your voice gets to the front of the queue, then we have it's one of our little perks from our Patreon, patreon.com/thewirestripped. And any money that we raise from there goes to line our pockets. No, sorry. Goes to line the pockets of the Ella Thompson Fund, which is a charity that supports all underprivileged kids in Baltimore. So we're really big fans of those guys and the work that they're doing. So it doesn't go into our money, into our wallets. It goes to them. And one thing we should say, another perk is you get the patrons get these episodes ahead of time. So if you're a patron, yeah, you might be able to listen to episode 5 right now.
I also get these episodes ahead of time because
should you make them
recording them. That's my part.
Let's head to the school. There's a lot that happens here. With Bubbles and the school and the kids and Bunny. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with Bubbles and Sherrod. So Bubbles realizes that Sherrod's missing a lot of school, so yeah, he gets his uncle suit back on. I love him in his uncle suit. There's so many heartbreaking moments in season 4, and Bubbles trying to play that boy's surrogate dad / uncle is just one of the most heartbreaking things, and he's trying so hard to save him, you know.
Yeah. I get that Bubbles has that thing, he has to take that someone under his wing, and Sherrod is definitely a lot more vulnerable than Johnny Weeks was. At least Johnny Weeks, I presume, yeah, was a full grown adult. Sherrod can't count, and that's desperately sad.
Yeah.
And Sherrod is like one of the most tragic characters in the whole Wire. We'll get to that kind of storyline in a few episodes, but that's, my heart goes out to Bubbles, but also I can understand why Sherrod has kind of been left behind by everyone else in his life.
Well, and he has been left behind by the education system, as the assistant principal outlines, because she explicitly says to Bubbles he'll be he'll go back in at the grade he's at, yeah, right? Because they don't
have the resources basically to take him down a grade or two.
Yeah, and it's like it's a policy, and mm-hmm, I think it's a lot of how education systems run it, but it's something that perhaps needs to be, you know, examined. And it kind of ties in with what Bunny's trying to do, mm-hmm, with the professor, to, you know, try and cater the education system toward the students' needs,
yeah,
rather than this one size fits all approach. Absolutely. Which we currently have. And you get that other little scene later on with Sherrod and Bubbles, where Sherrod kind of tries to get one over on Bubs and says he's got two, you know, what are you doing, some homework there? And it's like but it's a French book and an algebra book, and he says that they work. But you can't con a con artist, right?
Well, I mean, obviously Bubbles is a fantastic con artist, but what's going on here is basically Sherrod can't read and doesn't know the difference between, yeah, fundamentally the difference between a language textbook and a maths textbook, and doesn't realize that they're completely different subjects that would never be working together.
It hammers home just how far behind, yeah, he is. Like, which is, and it's kind of a catch 22, because even if he does go to school, he's not gonna, he's kind of too far gone. Mm. Like, the system's left him behind. He won't be able to comprehend anything that's being taught, right?
No. That's another sad point, unfortunately.
So sad.
Also in the schools, a slight touching with Cutty, and also how the system works. Cutty gets a temporary job. The deacon comes and visits him, says, "Hey, I got a job for you. You're going to round up the truants, and you and Matey Boy are going to pick up these truants, take them to school for a day, and then take them to school for September, and then do the same again for October, and we get a bunch of money."
Yeah, and it's just one day.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this episode's filled with these little tidbits, these little insights into the state of the education system and how it's kind of really comes across as half-arsed, yeah, doesn't it?
Yeah, that one day thing is super futile. I just don't. Again, it's another thing that kind of gets me riled up, in what we're seeing, what's happening in the middle schools, and where people can get lost. Because if it's literally just one more day, and then the system doesn't care about you anymore, then what chance have these guys got?
Yeah, what use is that?
Yeah.
And it's like, but they're putting so much effort into it. They've got people driving around in vans. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you may as well. I don't know. I'm not saying I've got the answers. Yeah. I don't have the answers. I don't not think the show's given the answers. But what we're seeing is that the policies are failing the kids. The teachers, you get a sense that they are trying, or they have but they're just up against it.
Up against it, but they want to make sure they've got everything they can do, because if they lose that budget, then there's less, they can do less.
Yeah, so exactly.
Even they completely know it's futile, but they just play the budget game. We'll make sure we get as much money in so we can do as much as we can with it. If we have less money, then there's less we can do, and that's not helping anyone.
And that's what they say to Bunny. And it's interesting watching, Bunny's our audience surrogate here, as we kind of learn the ins and outs of this system and what you can and can't do.
Well, and Cutty, in this specific case with the rounding up of the kids, because he's the one that's actually going and doing the lassoing and putting the kids in the vans.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to play and sweep this under the rug. I'm going to move this body into this jurisdiction so it's not my problem. You know, it's like there are games in the schools.
This is Jennifer Wood. She's the editor of Mental Floss.
When they send the people out to just like pick up the truant kids, you know, we need them to come in like one day a day a month or something, you know, or whatever it is. It's just sort of like it's a sad but totally realistic statement on America, and it's as true now, and I shouldn't say like if not more so, but almost more. People are more aware of how true the show was to what goes on in our lives every day that we just don't pay attention to, or because we don't want to believe it. We don't want to, you know, believe that it happens. And we've had it thrown in our face now for, you know, for so many years, just like so violently and loudly for the past like 5 years, you know, that it's hard to ignore that anymore.
That's why I hung out with Calvin. So it was pretty much Calvin Ford's story. The character name is a real live, you know, a real OG who, and now he's out, but he was not to be effed with at all. Dennis Cuddy Wise.
This is, of course, the man himself, Chad Coleman, who played Cuddy on The Wire.
But the story itself is Calvin Ford, and that's a story of redemption. And Calvin had been involved in one of the biggest heroin drug busts in the history of Baltimore, East Coast. And he did like 16 in federal. And he came out and he said, I learned to cook, you know, legally, and dude with a big heart and a wonderful person. And he made that choice to open that gym, and he's changed a lot of lives, and he created a champion and someone for the community to be extremely proud of. And it takes a lot of work, and the people, he's in the trenches every day, and he doesn't know what's going to go down. You know, he doesn't know if these kids are going to show up or who he's going to have to go out there and try to find. And that, all that was 1,000% real. And gaining the trust of these young men, you know, I watched it in real time, and always had nothing but, I tried to help him raise money for the gym and stuff like that. Just a staple in the community and just a stand-up human being. So proud of them. People don't, I believe in redemption. I believe that we can change. Given the opportunity and the right circumstances, you can change. And he's a shining example of that. An amazing human being.
And with Cutty again, going back to him just briefly with the boxing, he's trying to like groom Michael to be a better boxer. And we start seeing a bit more about Michael's hesitancy to be in the presence of an adult male.
Yes. Yeah. He's very reluctant.
Mm.
But he kind of comes round a bit with Cuddy, or Cuddy he starts to warm up to Cuddy a bit, I think, and he, you know, he goes to the fight with Justin.
Yeah.
And you get that, but we get another little glimpse into his home life here.
Yeah.
Don't we?
Yeah,
that's what Calvin has been up against too. So the guy didn't trust me, right, because of varying things in his background and, you know, rampant kind of homophobia within our community. I'm just gonna call it what it is. And so it creates a real challenge when you just genuinely care about somebody, because they're not used to anybody giving a damn about them. And I'll tell you guys, Snoop, the real Snoop. She was sitting in the hair makeup trailer, and she just said it 1,000%. Yo, I'm not used to white people being nice to me. I was like, wow, that's real. You see, you understand what I'm saying? And conversely, it ain't even just white. They're not used to people being nice. It's they think there's an angle or it's suspect or they're trying to get something from them, you know? It's a tough deal to really be able to reach someone and help them change their lives. But yes, and Cuddy want to be like Calvin Ford. That's right. I'm still working on Chad's fighting chance, which is, and I won't get into it, but it's something I want to do to really honor the Calvin Fords of the world who are out there and the kids who are trying to change their lives. So it's a very real deal. And Calvin Ford is a soldier, boots on the ground. And for him to have achieved this ultimate goal is just unbelievable. I saw it with my own eyes. And so that's incredibly exciting and inspiring as well. And he's got more champions coming for sure.
And we kind of get a little insight into the aftermath of the attack in the classroom, in Prez's classroom.
Yeah, I mean, Prez is freaked out. And he thinks the kids are freaked out, but they're not so much.
They're desensitized. Mm. They're gossiping is what they're doing.
Yeah.
Right? They're just treating it as something exciting and they're talking about her. He tries to have an important conversation with them. It doesn't really go very well. He's also just, we finally get to see Valchek's daughter and Prez's wife.
Yeah, is this the first time?
Yeah, first time.
Okay.
And we get the epigraph of the show, which is a cracking line as Prez is watching a football game. You know, no one wins, one side just loses more slowly.
Beautiful.
Which is, again, feels like we've got two sides of the poker game. Feels like it's another game. It's winning. It's all. I'm not able to tie all this together. But there's something in there. Someone more intelligent than me can tweet us.
Who's winning?
No one wins. One side just loses more slowly.
Why don't we get out of the house? Take a walk. It's a nice day.
I got this talk I gotta give to my first period about what happened.
An hour.
I gotta say something to those kids. I mean.
Okay. See? Somebody's winning.
I really liked, you know, on the subject of the schools, we were saying the policies aren't up to scratch, but the teachers know these kids really well, and that it comes across, and they're kind of trying, and we see that with Prez trying hard as a newbie, but a lot of the veterans are just like, they're worn out and weary, but there's still an emotional core to them. And the when Bunny's getting the tour, and the I think the eighth grade teacher, is it Grace Sampson, she describes the week, the days of the week.
Yes.
Which I thought was beautifully written. You know, they come in angry on Monday from the weekend, you know, and then by Wednesday they're the furthest away from whatever's at home or on the streets. That's when you get them at their happiest. Mm-hmm. Thursday they're feeling that weekend coming, and then Friday it's bad again. And it's like it's the exact opposite of how we all feel, as you know, we're able to feel in the comfort of our lovely existences, where we look forward to the weekend. It's like these.
They don't look forward to the weekend.
It's the opposite. Yeah, because these kids have school is a safe haven, whether they realize it or not. Mm. But it is, you know, it's a break from the horrors of their realities, some of their realities.
Yeah, and that's school should be the bit you don't like. In a way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, your home life. Yeah. If you don't have a good home life, then school is. School should be a supplement to that. Yeah. It can't be both. I did think, listening to that quote, though, I really want a brilliant editor. This is a challenge to all our listeners. Can somebody please cut that together, that quote with Craig David's 7 days, please, somehow? Monday. Really angry from the it's too dark.
Yes, I think it's too dark. I'd like someone to try, but try and make it lighthearted as well.
I was feeling bad again on Friday.
In major key, maybe, guys. Big thanks to everyone who contributed to this episode. We really couldn't do it without you, and this podcast wouldn't be the same without all those lovely voices and all the people we're going to name check right now. It's exhaustive, but it's really important to how the show works.
Why don't we do it super fast, like they do in the terms and conditions at the end of a radio ad? Yeah?
So, okay.
Ready? Let's go. Okay, big thank you to Sonics, our transcribing service. That's sonics.ia/invite/strip, where you can go and also use their services.
At Black Snow Comics, that's at Black Snow Comics. That's Michael Balistrieri for the amazing imagery and icons for this season, as well as Izzy Lawrence.
Martin and Sam for the Song by Song podcast, who do our brilliant theme music.
Producer Obi, who's been great, and we wouldn't have this podcast without him.
Lead producer and editor Tom Wally, who is not speeding this up. I swear we're just doing this naturally.
Socials, join us there. Twitter, Instagram, we are at The Wire Stripped.
Or you can go to our Patreon page and you get loads of extra stuff, and it's really amazing over there. We have lots of fun times. Patreon.com/The Wire Stripped.
Subscribe and review on your favorite podcast app. Give us a 5-star tap.
Give us a 5-star tap right now. Oh, we're on. 5-star tap.
5-star tap. This is why we don't do things quickly. And join us next week, guys. Episode 5 of Season 4, Alliances.
5-star tap is that's it now. We're just using that from here on out. Give us a 5-star tap.
Believe that.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.